Just in and so good. Thousands of summer deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save up to 60% on new arrivals from Vince, Rag & Bone, Adidas, Joe's, Marc Jacobs, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. But hurry for first dibs. Get your summer favorites up to 60% off at Nordstrom Rack today. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their Summer Splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in-store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
For another episode of Believe in Kentucky. The main man, AG Aaron Gershon from thecastpulse.com. My name is Vinny Hardy. AG, man, how's it going today?
Can't complain, man. We're just talking before the show here. This is a great stretch on the schedule with four home games in the next five and then the one road game being down in Nashville at Vanderbilt. So I'm looking forward to the stretch after a long week on the road last week.
Yeah, you had Fayetteville and Columbia back to Columbia, Fayetteville back to back, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, so it was a heck of a week, a lot of time on the road, but you know, a productive one, and it'll be a nice little stretch here, mostly here at home.
Good stuff, good stuff. Coming to y'all courtesy of the Believe Podcast Network, as always. We're live right now on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Jump in, leave a question, leave a comment, leave your thoughts, interact with us. We'll pop them up on the screen and cover all the news. You know, Kentucky beating Arkansas. We talked on the last episode about how should they respond going forward, because everybody's going to try to be physical on the road. Arkansas is desperate. They're not good, but they're going to be rowdy. The building's going to be packed, and that was the case. And
yeah, it was
rough start, but they weathered the storm and got the dub.
Yeah, and it's been a talking point we've been talking about a lot lately, where they needed to prove they can win one ugly, because those games are going to happen in March. And I put out a stat in the story I wrote after the game that last four national champions, Virginia, Baylor, UConn, and Kansas — I know I flipped the order on the last two there, but regardless, those four teams all had a game in the NCAA tournament where they scored 70 or less to win. You know, Virginia, that makes sense because their style of play, but the other three were all really good offensive teams, and they still even had to grind out a win in that tournament. So for this young Kentucky team to kind of see that, hey, like, we can win a game without scoring 80 plus, I think was really important. And I get that, you know, it was a combination of Kentucky just doing enough defensively where there was — I thought the biggest thing was the effort was just intensified. They were closing out on threes. They were making a priority to box out. There was a lot of high energy on defense, where I don't know you could say that every game this season. And then obviously there's the combination of Arkansas being a bad offensive team, and Muss even saying after the game, I don't know who my point guard is. So, you know, they got lucky that this game, you know, happened against that opponent. But at the same time, it's a game I think you could build off of from a confidence standpoint, from a defensive standpoint. But we all know that, you know, this team is capable of scoring a lot of points. I think, you know, these last two games, I'm still not too worried about the offense yet. You know, let's see what happens tomorrow when they play a Florida team that is kind of similar to UK, where they don't play much defense and they focus on offense. But this was really important, I think, to get one where, again, you didn't play your best basketball. The offense certainly struggled for much of the night, but you were able to do enough defensively to grind out a win.
Yeah, you're not lying, man. You said that literally pretty much verbatim the past three episodes. They gotta be able to grind one out when the shots aren't falling, gotta be able to score 62 and get beat up in Columbia, and then to follow that up with a 63-point game and get a win in Fayetteville. I mean, what a difference a game makes. But like you said, we'll take it. They did dodge some bullets. There were some open shots, point blank open shots. Arkansas had open threes, where if you get the team that executes better, they're probably still going to make you pay. But you have to worry about that down the road. That didn't.
Right.
They missed those shots Saturday, thankfully. And, 63 was enough.
63 was enough. Yeah. And, it was such an ugly basketball game in the first half. Like, both teams, man, it was just bad. And you had that's the one thing, too. That's why I'm not too concerned about the offense, is because they got good looks in the first half. They weren't taking selfish shots like they did at points against South Carolina. Like, there were some good looks that just were not falling for Kentucky. You had the Justin Edwards play where he has a breakaway and he travels. And then early in the second half, Aduthi Arrow gets like three straight offensive rebounds and can't put it back in. Like, just nothing was going right offensively for the first 25-ish minutes of the ball game. And then, they still finished the second half with, 39 points. Reed Sheppard had 14 in the second half. Antonio Reeves and Trey Mitchell were money down the stretch. Ukana Nyenso was awesome, I thought, in this game. So, there was a lot to like, even though it was ugly. They only scored 63 points. They did by no means play their best basketball, but, sometimes that's what it's got to be. And especially this year on the road, where it appears – it's harder than ever. I mean, I saw what Kyle Tucker put out. I don't have it in front of me about these top 10 teams against non-ranked opponents on the road and how they're like 10 games under 500. So anytime you can go in and get it done, you're not going to take it for granted. I think Kentucky has two of those, whatever wins they are now, with the win at Arkansas and the win at Florida. So, you don't take it for granted, but you realize that you need to improve in certain areas. But again, the area that they've been struggling at most was a positive in that game. So that's the good news from it.
And then you look at Duke, they kind of got a gift wrap for them at home. Clemson had them, and that last foul call, normally maybe whistles usually get swallowed on that. And that was a little ticky tack, and they got some free throws to get out of Cameron with a win that I don't know if they should have gotten.
Their win last night was pretty impressive on the road, but they got some luck on their side going, or whatever happened there on Saturday, for sure. But again, it's just, this year on the road is crazy. Like, it's always been hard to win on the road. I think it's been a little, I mean, the atmospheres are unbelievable and all that, but at the end of the day, usually the better team wins games, like, period. There are upsets always, but usually on the, these really good teams find a way on the road. We've obviously seen some elite Kentucky teams go on the road and be just fine. But this year, man, like Kansas, it seems like every time they go on the road, and I still think they're a really good team. I know they're, I don't know how many losses. I think they're only like 4-3 in league play, but I still think Kansas has a Final Four roster. Like, they can't win on the road right now. They go to Iowa State and they lose. We saw Houston lose two in a row on the road. They're a really, really stout defensive team. And obviously, I think Sampson's one of the best coaches, if not the best, in the country right now. Tennessee goes down to Starkville and they lose. Like, this, it is hard on the road right now. So, again, like, Arkansas is not a great team, but College Game Day was there. Bud Walton, until Kentucky put the nail in the coffin, that place, for my money, is the toughest place to play in the SEC, and it lived up to the hype all game until that final 2-minute stretch where Kentucky went on the 9-0 run to put it out of reach, and then the fans emptied out really quick. They were just looking for reasons to get their team up and then drag them across the finish line. So, you will never take a win like that for granted, but now the good news is Kentucky comes home and you got to clean up, right? Like, Tennessee's a really good team. We all know about that one Saturday. You can't overlook Florida with what they do offensively on the boards. You go to Nashville in between there, but then you come back and you have Gonzaga and Ole Miss. Like, those are all four of these home games are going to be challenges that are coming up, but you know, the way it is on the road this year, you really got to take care of business.
Yeah, yeah. And, like you said, with Tennessee at home, you can't overlook that. And no. I think the 2014 team, I think the Julius Randle team, that team couldn't buy an SEC win on the road until, you know, way late into the season. They kept just dropping games. And, you know, so we've seen that kind of thing before. This team has already got a few wins on the road under their belt. Yeah. And so, but yeah, overall, like you said, the struggles for good teams on the road, Houston got by Texas last night to kind of get that bad taste over. Yeah. And speaking of Texas, man, this whining about the horns down, this is not going to work when y'all come to the SEC.
It's just not like these. And look at, I mean, there's nothing you could do like a K down or whatever for Kentucky, but like the things that the crowd yells at Kentucky and the atmospheres, it's just unbelievable when UK comes to town. And, you know, Texas, it'll be the same way for football. I think basketball, just being the brand they are, they'll still draw pretty big crowds. Like when they go to Knoxville, when they go to Tuscaloosa and Fayetteville, like it's College Station, even, man, like it is going to be brutal. Brutal. And you got to toughen up, man. Like, this league is not for the weak, and you're going to be hearing things and seeing things that you may not have even seen in the Big 12, even though I'm sure they hear it over at Allen Fieldhouse and at Iowa State. Looks like an incredible atmosphere. But yeah, like, they got to toughen up. It's not going to work in this league. You're not going to have someone for, you're not going to BYU ain't out here. Like, they're not going to be so kind.
That's right. And you've been to more road venues than I have. But, like, I mean, you know, Tennessee isn't the level of Fayetteville and Gainesville and those, you know, when they're hopping.
It is when Kentucky is there.
But when Kentucky's in there, it is vicious. I tell the Tennessee fans all the time, I said, man, y'all just hate us, don't you? Yeah. I said, it's so vicious. Any little call you think they don't get, boos, the vitriol from the – nosebleeds to courtside, doesn't matter where you are in Thompson Bowling, they can't stand Kentucky.
No, and I've been there twice, and Kentucky won both games. So the first one was 2020, so that Tennessee team was kind of not great. So it was a pretty big Kentucky presence in the arena. But then last year's game, which was Kentucky's coming off the loss to South Carolina, looks like their season is like crumbling. Tennessee's number five, so it was like the smallest Kentucky contingency I've seen at a Tennessee event, and Tennessee fans were out for blood, and as they should have been. It was a chance to really, I wouldn't say put the nail in the coffin, but start to right,
a pretty good haymaker. Yeah
that would have been a hell of a haymaker. And Kentucky goes in there and wins. But yeah, man, it's crazy. All these places when Kentucky's there, really. I mean, outside of Vanderbilt, nothing against them. It's just the way it is where Kentucky fans take over that building. But Alabama last year was unbelievable. Georgia was pretty damn good last year with the environment. Mississippi State was sold out. And then this year, obviously, A&M was a really good crowd. A lot of Kentucky fans in there, but it was a really good crowd. Florida was unbelievable. Arkansas was unbelievable. And I'm sure – you know, as we go on here, Tennessee, the last game of the regular season, you still got Auburn, which is crazy. That place, even when they're the one where it feels like every big game, it doesn't matter if it's Kentucky, Tennessee, Alabama, they get up for it, man. Auburn fans are awesome. So that game's going to be crazy down there. And then we'll see what it's like at LSU at that point in the year. I'm sure they'll have a bigger crowd than usual. So it's not a joke. And even Eric Musselman acknowledged it, right? Like, when Kentucky comes to town, it's a big game, and you know, it draws the big crowds. But Texas, it won't necessarily be that for them when they come here. But, you know, they're the new team. Fans are going to be intrigued that first time that Texas comes in, and Oklahoma too, for that matter. But more so, I think, on the basketball side, Texas. And they know the history of this horns down thing and the commotion it has. And, you know, some of these schools like Arkansas and LSU and A&M, like, they have football history there too, and mm-hmm. old basketball history. So they get to revisit that. It's just going to be – they got to toughen up before next winter – or really starting next fall with basketball. But I think the football side handles the L's down thing a little better than basketball, with their coach even saying something here.
Yeah. Ronnie Terry's got to stop. Yeah. Man. He's gotta quit. Yeah. And we don't have to worry about it with since Kansas is KU, but with Tennessee and Texas, they argue over who the real UT is. So it's going to be that when they come in, and then the whole which shade of orange is better, the burnt orange or the
Tennessee orange.
All that is brewing. That's, you know, anytime they played each other non-conference, you know, Tennessee played Texas in basketball a few times, you know, Barnes came back or went back to Austin or whatever. And they always argue about that. So that's that, in addition to the horns down, should Tennessee beat them, it's look, you just gotta, like you said, just toughen up, get some thicker skin, because, you know, unless Greg Sankey surprises us, he's not about to start, you know, getting everybody to ease up on that kind of thing.
Nor should he. Nor should he.
It means more. If it means more, just let it mean more. Leave it alone.
Yeah. you have to leave it alone. There ain't nothing wrong with it. It's ridiculousness that it offends anyone. It is what it is. Like, you should take it as a compliment that enough people hate you. Usually if and I'm sure Kentucky sees it this way too. Like, if you're hated, it means you're doing a lot of winning. Mm-hmm. And Texas historically is an awesome athletics program, but that's not, I mean, obviously they haven't won national championships that with any of the major sports recently here, but, you know, historically, Texas is one of the best athletic departments, feared athletics departments in the country. That's why Kentucky basketball gets the slander it gets on the road, because everyone knows how good they are. Mm-hmm. Alabama football, Georgia football, you name it. So I don't know why Texas doesn't just embrace being the villain instead of cry about that type of stuff, but it is what it is.
Yeah. You know, everybody does the chomp. If you score a touchdown in the swamp,
you really
chomp them. You do L's down for a little bit. Whatever school has a little thing, it gets reversed.
Even NFL fans were like, Scott Satterfield was being a baby about that whole thing, if I remember correctly.
Yes. You remember when, you know, T.O. scored against the Ravens? He did the Ray Lewis dance. That happened.
I remember the Giants when they were in the playoff, the year they won the Super Bowl, the second one with Eli. Hakeem Nicks did the Dirty Bird in the wild card round against the Falcons. Yeah. Like,
it's part of it.
Yeah, if you don't like it, stop it.
That's it. Well, man, I guess you can come home again. We've seen it with Lynn Cohen and now Eric Wolford rejoining Mark Stoops' staff. And Wolford, of course, being the latest. So, surprise. I mean, unexpected. Just, you know.
definitely unexpected, surprise. All those adjectives there. It's just. With how it ended, I don't think this one was all that anticipated, but I think when you break it all down, it makes some sense. I mean, one, Wolford is a really, really good recruiter. Like, I don't think anyone could argue against that. Just his 1 year here, he was the primary recruiter for Deion Walker. That guy's pretty good. And then he was the secondary recruiter for Berrion Brown, who's also pretty good. So in 1 year, he made a difference on the trail here. Alabama, he cleaned up while he was there. Everywhere at South Carolina, he was a great recruiter. I mean, this guy gets talent. You know, say what you want about how he left, about maybe how he is as a coach. He's a tough-nosed guy. He's not necessarily going to kill you with kindness or be really, like, compassionate. He's going to push you to your limits here. And that was something that was talked about from the players and kind of, like, Zach Yenser was a player's coach, and not to say Wolford isn't, but just more so like Yenser really made it a priority. And I don't know if that's going to be the case with Wolford, but I do know he's going to go out and get talent, and he's going to do his best to whoop his room into shape. So, you know, when you break it all down, I think the hire makes a lot of sense. It's just the way things ended last time. And, you know, Yenser was extended. I kind of had to be at that point. So, like, I don't put too much stock into that whole thing, but, you know, this was a very unique situation where a job came open in the middle of January. Alabama's job came open in the middle of January. It led to a little bit of a ripple effect, you know, with Washington, Arizona, San Jose State, all the schools involved there. But so for Wolford, if he wasn't going to be retained, which obviously he wasn't, they hired, I think, the board took someone from his UW staff from that. His options were going to be very limited, I'm guessing, unless like he went and was an analyst or something, or someone created a different position for him outside of offensive line coach, just because at that point in time, just how many are open. So Kentucky had an opening, and Mark Stoops felt like Wolford was an upgrade, and he went ahead and pulled the trigger. So it's just crazy after how it all ended that, you know, 2 years later, you know, we're here. But like you said, Kentucky isn't, or Mark Stoops hasn't shied away from rehiring guys.
Yeah. And like we talked about last week, week before, you know, with Cohen, usually if there's hires to be made at this point in the year, is you hope it's not a panic hire. And we talk, if right. Cohen left, we were talking about it probably have to be a panic kind of last minute, just get somebody. And here we are now in late January, and they make the complete opposite in their minds of a panic hire when you upgrade.
Yeah.
You know, you have to, it's business, nothing personal with Yenzer, but now they have to move on from him. And hey, we get a chance to get Wolford because Saban retired. So it was a domino effect in their favor. And it's probably rare for late January.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And again, like, I think the outrage, you know, you saw on social media after the fact, I think is just, I get it didn't end well, but you got to break it down more than that. Like, obviously the two made up or else we wouldn't be here. They've been buddies for a long freaking time. I mean, they coached together at USF back in the 90s, the whole construction job thing that Mark Stoops was talking about with the interview with Maggie Davis last night. Like, they go way, way back. And I would think that if the bridge was burnt, we wouldn't be here. So clearly there was enough that time heals wounds and they kissed and made up. And, you know, this does make a lot of sense to me. I mean, it does suck for Zach Yenzer. I think obviously, you know, I really enjoyed getting to cover him. He's a really good dude, but it's a results-based business, right? And he wasn't recruiting at a high level like Wolford is or did when he was here and just does historically. And let's face it, right? I mean, they made significant improvement in pass protection this year. That's great, but they didn't get better run blocking. If anything, they got worse. And like, there's no reason a team with Ray Davis should have been 98th in rushing offense or whatever they were in the country and be second and long, third and long all year long because they can't establish their run game on early downs. Like, there was just results are results at the end of the day, and the results weren't good enough. And, you know, Mark Stoops felt the need to make a move, and I can't blame him.
So was the maybe development of the entire room. He just kind of go with his five and stick with it and the rest or the rotating that we've, you know, kind of got used to seeing, maybe that's kind of going away again.
Yeah, I would think so. And, you know, that was another criticism of Wolford's first tenure here, right, was that he didn't build enough depth and he inherited a freaking awesome room, right, obviously. Though, you know, I think – a couple of things you have to do, give him credit for, is like that was Luke, if I'm not mistaken, Luke Fortner's only year playing center was Wolford, right?
I think so.
So he helped that transition, I would think. Eli Cox, that was his first time really playing. He's a midseason All-American before he got hurt. He helped bring in Dare Rosenthal, who's pretty darn good. So, you know, obviously he did have some to do with their success. I get he inherited the players. It's outside of Rosenthal, like Darren Kennard was there, Cox and Fortner were there, though they moved positions. So, you know, he didn't behind them, like, obviously there was not much that he developed that we saw Yenzer deal with that in 2022. And then this year, I think Yenzer actually did a pretty good job of developing depth. Like, I think they have something in Dylan Ray. I think they have something in Malachi Wood in the future as he continues to just grow into his body and mechanically be trustworthy enough to play. But again, the recruiting wasn't up to par. Even the play still wasn't up to par. Guys like Jagger Burton, like a high 4-star guy, he hasn't lived up to that yet. And, you know, maybe that's coaching. Maybe that's the player. I don't know. I'm not there, but, you know, I'm just looking for reasons here. It just adds up. And, you know, we'll see how this goes. But Mark Stoops clearly when you make a move like that this late, he felt pretty damn strongly about it because obviously Yenzer helped recruit this last class. I would assume he had at least some hand in the two offensive line transfers. So, you know, and, you know, we've heard all this talk about continuity. So to go away from all that means like there was something clearly that needed upgrading.
Yeah. And I didn't count myself as outraged. I was surprised. It was unexpected. Yeah, it was funny to me. I was like, really? Now this is yeah. hilarious, you know. But what? There were some that were outraged. It's not me that's having to work with him. It's not me that's having to decide whether I'm gonna hire him or not. So, right. like you said, all the things that you said, no doubt he considered everything. He weighed out all of the pros and cons, and in his mind, it was worth making a move and pulling the trigger. And he feels, hey, he. You know, the chemistry of the staff. I'm sure he thought about all those things. This isn't the first hire he's made. This is the first time he's hired him. So it was a go for him to, hey, this is an upgrade overall for the recruiting, for development, for everything that they're trying to do. Wolford had worked with Cohen already, so there's that again. Yeah. So, I don't know. I can't say. I don't see the need to get outraged. It was surprising, unexpected, and funny to me.
All in one. Yeah, no, I agree 100%. Like, the outrage to me doesn't make much sense. I get people want to be upset with stuff, and that's how it goes sometimes. But again, you break it all down. I think it's the right move. We'll see if it pays off. But, you know, the last 2 years just haven't been up to par for what fans expect at this point and what anyone wants at this point. So when you are struggling per se, and you can't be hesitant. You got to just do what you got to do. Obviously Woody was a guy that Liam Cohen was really close with, and they felt it was time to move on from him. They made that move. You know, obviously they made the move with Scangarillo after 1 year to get to cut bait with him. So like, you can't, as Mark Stoops said in that interview with Maggie last night, like, you can't be sensitive in this business. And this shows at least that he's not being sensitive about a situation that happened 2 years ago if he's given him another chance.
Exactly. Because, I mean, did he, you know, could he, like they both said, they both could have handled stuff better. Wolfie could have probably came up and said, look, man, I got Alabama sitting here calling me, and it's Alabama. But if he just kind of ghosted him, which seems to be the case. Hard feelings were and reactions, and, you know, they're pissed at each other, but, you know, they worked it all out, and, you know, they smoothed it out and patched it up and ready to go forward. So
that's all you can do.
Exactly.
Yeah. Just give it a, you know, look, if it doesn't work out, then Stoops has explaining to do, and we'll go down this rabbit hole again next year or in 2 years. But for now, they're, I understand the move, and I can't complain about it.
Exactly. Before we, wrap it up, got to get some thoughts on the playoffs as well. Maybe we don't have to predict the Super Bowl, but the playoffs. But got to talk about the app that we partnered up with. Just talking about it before we recorded it. You just downloaded the Autograph app, a new app where everything is consolidated in one place. All the podcasts and UK content that you can consume, go to the Autograph app, and it's right there. So if you want to get rewarded for listening to our show, you listen to our show already, the team at Autograph, co-founded by Tom Brady, is redefining the fan experience by letting users earn points for the acts of fandom they take every day, like listening to this show, which we appreciate. The Autograph fandom app gives you access to all your favorite Kentucky content in one place, and offers rewards like tickets, exclusive merchandise, and more. You're already listening to our show, but now you can earn points and get rewarded for it. So head over to the Apple App Store and search for Autograph Fandom Rewarded and download it for free today using referral code Believe Kentucky, BLEAV Kentucky, all one word. Link and code are also in our podcast description. So when you see it on Apple or Spotify, they're in the description. You can also read it and go down there, click the link, use our promo code, download it, listen to us. Every episode of ours will be there. Every episode of ours goes up on a Sea of Blue. All of a Sea of Blue's content is on there. All your UK content, articles, podcasts, consolidated into one app. So check out that Autograph Fandom app. And then get yourself some swag or tickets just for doing the stuff you already do. So, hey, it's a really cool thing. Michigan was the first school they did. As you heard me reading the ad, Tom Brady is a co-founder, so that makes sense with him being a UM guy. But they wanted to do Kentucky next. They reached out to us as well as other content creators that do UK content. So go on there and check out the app and get yourself some points, get yourself some rewards for listening to podcasts and reading articles, man. It's good stuff.
Absolutely.
We're down to one NFL game, man. It's a rematch. Yeah. Niners and Chiefs. Detroit, bless their hearts. Lord have mercy.
Man, dude. Oh. Yeah, that one stunk. I think at this point, usually, like, I don't really have rooting interest unless it's a team, obviously, if the Giants are in, or a team I dislike, or at this point, like, the four teams left, it was more so give me really good football. But, you know, it was obviously a little different with Detroit and the history there and never having been to a Super Bowl despite being one of the oldest franchises, all, you know, all that everyone knows about. And just the way that thing went, man, where you jump up. I thought they were going to win by like 25-30 into that range, like at one point. Like, they were just kicking ass all game long. And for it to end that way, that just stunk. And, like, I can't, you know, when I reflected on it more, I can't kill Dan Campbell too much. That is how they got there. They're a very aggressive team. They go for it. They go for two, as you saw against Dallas, even against your Cowboys in that game that they lost. They just kept going for two. They were down at the seven. They moved it back to the two. I mean, they just kept going for it. Like, there was no – he was locked into that decision no matter what. So, you know, I can't fault them for doing what they've done all year, but maybe they need to find a kicker they could trust. I don't know. But that was just – that was heartbreaking. I felt bad for the Lions fans, that's for damn sure. But credit to San Francisco for not giving up and – Mr. Irrelevant in the Super Bowl in year two is pretty unbelievable. I mean, he hasn't lost a playoff game that he's been able to actually finish yet. And it's pretty amazing stuff what that guy's been able to do. And obviously how much talent San Francisco has, it makes sense that they're here in the Super Bowl, but that stunk. That stunk for Detroit.
Yeah. And they've, for their fan base, I mean, especially pre-Stoops, we saw our fair share of, wow, Kentucky found another way to lose in a creative fashion. And Detroit has experienced pretty much the same thing. You know, they hadn't won a division since 93.
Crazy. And
to be 30 minutes away, and they could taste 17. It. The shot of Ford Field going crazy at the watch party, and then as it slipped away, they never showed a shot of Ford Field again. Because what, I mean, heartbreaking. No. Stab for them. I mean, you know, the old 80-year-old fans that were there in 1957 when they won the NFL championship, the old guy that dyed his hair blue, like, you know, I mean, just feel bad for all of them.
It's awful, man.
And on the other side for the AFC, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. We still couldn't believe that Mahomes had never played road playoff games, and now he's played two and went out and won both of them.
Yeah, shocker. And boy, that, like, him and Kelce, man, it's just so fun to watch. Like, it is dominant. Like, that first half, really the first quarter, like the fourth down that Kelce made the diving grab on, the touchdown. Yeah. What was it, 11 catches, 11 targets? Like, unbelievable the connection those two have. So, you know, I can't do anything but respect. Just like at some point, you just tip your cap and respect what New England did. It's starting into the same with Kansas City, right? I mean, it is just – They're a machine, and this is the best defense they've had in all these years. Like, they are loaded. Steve Spagnuolo, obviously a guy I've grew up watching his defenses. He was the defense coordinator for the Giants when they won Super Bowl 42, and then he came back and he was the defense coordinator for a couple of years. Had the, I think, number one or two defense in 2016, and, you know, now he's winning all these Super Bowls and AFC titles with Kansas City. So they have an incredible unit. But yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it came down to a quarterback play in that football game. I know Baltimore, it was more to it, but Lamar, as special of an athlete as he is, and as great of a quarterback as he is during the regular season, he's just a little limited as a passer still. I mean, it just is what it is. There were some throws that were there that weren't made, and I don't understand what the game plan was, you know, when you're the best rushing team in football, and Buffalo ran the ball down their throats last week, and you don't run the ball. It just made no sense. And, you know, I felt bad for Lamar because, you know, he's had to prove a lot of people wrong, and now people are going to go back and criticize him. I still think he's the MVP and has a chance to win a Super Bowl one day. But there were some limitations in that passing game, and not just his fault. I think they obviously they've never really given him the wide receiver help he needs. They have, I mean, Zay Flowers is a stud, but he was only a rookie. You know, Rashad Bateman hasn't developed into much. Nelson Agholor is a journeyman who's been around. OBJ is at the end of his career. So, you know, I'm not going to throw it all in Lamar, but, you know, when your defense pitches a shutout against Patrick Mahomes in the second half, you got to score more than 3 points.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They scored 7 and yeah, 7 in the first quarter. So, yeah. You know, that one stunk for them, but the better team, I think, and the better quarterback advanced. And I think the two best teams in football are in the Super Bowl. So at least we have that.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Spags in that defense, and you know Kansas City is going to make some tweaks in the offseason to get the offense back to where it's more than just Kelce. The receiver upgrades are going to happen for Kansas City as well. So.
And Rashee Rice is only going to get better. That dude's a stud. I don't know if he's going to develop into a wide receiver one or a CeeDee Lamb type guy, but I think he can be a really, really solid top end two, low end one for them. So, and yeah, like you said, that's not going to go unaddressed. They're going to get they're going to get some wideouts in there. But what's crazy is like the guys who struggled all season long step up, right? MVS, like the play against Philly, he had another big drop. I forget which game it was. Like game on the line, got to seal it. Third and long, take a deep shot. He's there. Like you just got to respect what Kansas City's doing, man. And it should be a really good game in 2 weeks, but I'm not betting against 15. That's for damn sure.
Can't. And you talk about the rooting interest, or you want to just see good football at this point. And for me, as a Cowboys fan, I can't root for the Niners. So
I can't either as a Giants fan. No.
And you know, we're NFC guys, but we in this situation,
we both had a lot of battles with the Niners, playoff battles, and regular season ones, and playoff spots, and all that stuff. So yeah,
and that would That would give them six if they won it.
They would tie. They would tie.
Pass us. They pass us.
Pass the guys in Pittsburgh. Yeah. No, Pittsburgh's at 60. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, no, it's like, you know, with the Blue Bloods with the titles, you know, Kentucky's trying to catch UCLA, but you don't want to see North Carolina try to continue to catch us and all that stuff. So,
right.
That's what it is. Yeah. Same kind of pettiness, you know, on this thing as well.
No, 100%. And I think. The thing that's different, obviously, San Francisco has a lot of likable guys this time around, which isn't always been the case with San Francisco, it feels like. Sure. But you know, I mean, how can you not respect what Brock Purdy's done? McCaffrey, Kittle, Debo, all those guys. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'll be rooting for I at the end of the day do more so care about having a really good game, but yeah, I have trouble rooting for the Niners too. So I guess I will be rooting for Kansas City, even though it's kind of the same thing as always. But we're witnessing history at the same time. So, you know, you got to tip your cap.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, everybody, if they don't know, they can check your workout at thecastpaws.com. What you got queued up for this week? Besides, you know, got the games and all that.
Yeah. Well, tomorrow, actually, we're going to be speaking with the football transfers, so we'll have some stuff rolling out on that throughout the week or so. I don't know exactly how I'll do it, speaking with 10 different guys. I don't think it's going to be a player per story type thing, but we'll figure something out on that. But, yeah, and then the two games, and I think this is probably the most important week of the season so far, right? You got Florida coming in as a high-end quad two game, really, really good offense, elite rebounding team. Like, they cannot be overlooked at all. And then you got a top 10 game with Tennessee Saturday night. Like this is some pretty damn, these are the type of weeks you look forward to, and they're both at home and a chance to, if you get these two wins, man, you're in really good shape. I mean, I think I see a lot of people annoyed, like, oh, they have UK as a 4 seed. I think look at the resume. That's correct. Right.
Yeah. I haven't understood the frustration with that either.
That has to be correct. Cause they've won 2 quad 1 games. It's what, Florida down there. And then Carolina, they've lost the other 3. And they don't have that marquee top 10 win yet. Well, yeah, they do. Carolina, I'm sorry. But not in conference play, I should say. And so if they can go 2-0 this week, sweep Florida for a third straight year, take down Tennessee, who's number 5, and they're playing great right now. We all hate them all you want. Dalton Kincaid, Antonio Reeves, Mark Sears in some order are the top three players in the SEC. Mm-hmm. And what Kinect's doing right now is just ridiculous. The heater he's on the last 10 games or so. So, you know, Saturday night is going to be, I think, the most entertaining anticipated game so far of the year. And if you win that one and the game here against Florida, like, you're going to move up a whole seed line, if not more. So this is a huge, huge week for this program. So we'll be all over covering it. And really excited for these two games.
So thecatchpaws.com, agershon99. Y'all follow Aaron there. Man, your new profile pic. What show were you on when you did that?
Oh, yeah. That was from ABC's 36's Bowl Preview. Bowl Preview. Okay. So that was with Jeff Pecoro, and he had me and John Clay from the Herald Leader on there. So that was cool to be a part of that one, have a little fun over there. And, yeah, we'll see. Maybe they'll – maybe I did good enough to get an invite back when they do something for the NCAA tournament. We'll see. Pecoro's the man. Obviously, everyone knows him listening to the football games, and now he's the sports director at 36, so you get him on TV too. So always appreciate any opportunity to get in front of a camera, get on radio, whatever it is. I always am appreciative of it.
Absolutely, man. Got a little pick for sure. For sure. I get him on here and chop it up closer to spring.
Yeah, he's the man. And yeah, he's very passionate too. He if there's someone who hates Tennessee more than you, it might be that guy. So you get him on a rant about Tennessee, about the current landscape of college athletics. He'll get on a roll, taking pictures out after 80 pitches, pitch limits, all that good stuff. And that's taking over sports nowadays.
Yeah, for the longest, he was one of the last players walking around that had beaten Tennessee before Kentucky beat him.
I know.
You know, he's on the 84 team. And
yeah, that one in Knoxville, that's right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I understand. And him in the booth too, man, with him and Tom, he gets so excited.
Oh, man.
I forget which one. It might have been the C.J. Conrad game where they beat Missouri, you know, at the last second, and Tom didn't do the classic touchdown Kentucky. He was like, I was waiting for a signal. And Pecoro said, I didn't need a signal. he was already just screaming and, you know.
So, man. Yeah, he's had some fun. He's had some fun ones, man. They've had some fun calls together. And it's a – yeah, he's the man. They're great in the booth, and so is Goose Givens and Tom on the basketball side. Tom's obviously as good as it gets. So, UK's got a pretty good – when you can't stay in the broadcasting crews, you can always turn them on and mute the game if you want. I'll just say it that way, because there are some really good TV broadcasters. That's not a dig, but I saw a lot of – and I don't get to watch many of the games because I'm there, but I heard a lot of people – complaining about Jay Billis on Saturday. So if you don't like it, turn on those guys on radio. I promise you, you'll like what they do.
Absolutely. Well, AG, man, we got to get another good episode in, and hope everybody enjoys it. Y'all keep tuning in to Believe in Kentucky. We got shirts as well, Cat Daddy shirts. Go to shop.believe.com and get yourself a shirt. And we'll be back next week for sure. Might have another episode this week. We'll see. But y'all follow us on all the social media, and we'll keep you up to date and let you know. Go Cats. Beat the Gators tomorrow. Follow Aaron Gershon at the Cats Paws. For Aaron, my name is Vinny. We'll be back next time with another episode of Believe in Kentucky and the Believe Podcast Network. We'll catch everybody later on now.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.